There was a pastor who used a very creative style to start his sermon one Sunday. I didn't see this happen. I read about it, but it was so intriguing to me, I thought I'd share what he did with you. I toyed with making y'all do this, but I think it's a better idea I tell you about it. He asked for 5 or 6 volunteers from the congregation, and he got up those 5 or 6 people that volunteered up front, and he said to them, "I want you to make a circle." So they all just grabbed hands and stood in a circle. And the pastor said, "Is there any other kind of circle that you can make?" So they looked at each other, and they grabbed each other around the shoulders, and they made a circle. And the pastor still said, "Is there any other way you can make a circle?" So they dropped their hands and they squeezed in real tight, shoulder to shoulder, and they made a circle. But the pastor still said, "Is there any other kind of circle that you can make?" So this time they squeezed in as tight as they could in a football-like huddle till they nearly were falling on top of each other, trying to make a circle. And still the pastor said, "Is there any other kind of circle that you can make?" And at that point, someone in the congregation said, "Turn around! Face out!" And so, they kind of looked at each other, and very awkwardly, stepped facing out and holding their hands backwards, and made a circle. There's a really different point of view, making a circle, all joining hands and facing in, than making a circle, all joining hands and facing out. But still the pastor said, "Is there any other way to make a circle?" And said, "How about trying everybody just putting one hand in the center?" We used to call that a Texas star in square dance, where everybody puts one hand in. You can see in and you can see out and you can move around. There actually are several ways for 5 or 6 people to make a circle. So why is it that if you got, I think anywhere, you got 5 or 6 people together and said, "Okay, now, make a circle," their first inclination would be to all join hands and make an inward-facing circle. And it would really take some motivation and some enthusiasm and some prodding on someone else's part to get them to make any other kind of circle. Perhaps that's because from the time we've been very small children, our teachers have taught us the correct way to make a circle. Come on, let's all come down the carpet and make a circle on the mat. And what happens if one of the little kids is facing out when you make one of those little, "Now come on, Joey, join the group." On the playground, when you play with your friends and ring around the rosy and all the other kinds of circle games, duck, duck, goose, doggy, doggy, who stole your bone? Everybody knows how you make a circle. Any other kind of circle seems just a little bit awkward. It's outside of the normal. It's outside of our normal way of thinking. And it can be sometimes difficult to get our minds around. Perhaps that will give you some understanding as to what was going on with the disciples. You see, they knew how to make a circle. They'd been taught since the time they were this big. Their circle was called the Messiah. Who the Messiah would be when the Messiah came. The Messiah was going to come. They'd been told since they were very, very young. And they believed this. And finally, Jesus is with them and before them, and they are absolutely convinced he is the one. But what kind of Messiah was Jesus supposed to be? They'd been told that he would be powerful and mighty, and he would set up a great kingdom. Now, what kinds of things do you think of when you think of power and might and kingdom. What kind of circles form in your mind? I'm sure that Jesus' conversations about servanthood and suffering and slavery and death just did not fit. They couldn't get their minds around it. No matter how many times Jesus said, "We're going to make this Messiah thing look different," they kept just making the Messiah thing tighter, what they thought. Hanging on to that view they needed. And they made their circle tighter. James and John's request, especially coming right after Jesus says, "You know, guys, I'm going to die." To say, "Oh, by the way, can I be first and can he be second?" Seems a little strange. You think they would be asking instead, "And when this happens, what's going to happen to us?" But they still had in their minds this powerful kingdom. They knew that Jesus was talking about something happening when they got to Jerusalem. And they knew it had to do with his kingdom being set up. They knew the time was getting close. But no matter what Jesus said, their old models of thinking kept coming back to what their view of power and authority and leadership and kingdom were all about. Now, James and John, remember, these are Jesus' disciples, not just Jesus' disciples, but they're part of the inner circle of disciples. They're part of the 12. And more than that, they're part of the inner circle of the inner circle of disciples. They're part of the 3, Peter, James, and John. These are the ones that were getting it the most. These are the ones that Jesus was depending on, spreading his kingdom the most. So you can imagine if they weren't getting it, there wasn't many others getting it either. Interestingly, when the disciples, the rest of the 12, the 10, hear that James and John have made this ludicrous request, what is their response? They're mad. They're mad at James and John. But I really don't think they're mad because they get it and say, "Do you realize how stupid that request was? Do you have any idea what this cup Jesus is talking about is?" Remember, this is the same cup. They said, "Oh yeah, we'll drink of it, no problem." This is the same cup that when Jesus kneels in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus prays, "Lord, if there is any other way, let this cup pass from me." They hadn't a clue what they were asking for. I really don't think the disciples were mad because they realized how naive and inappropriate James and John's was. I think they were mad the same way the second and third kid are mad in the family when kid number one calls dibs on the front seat before they thought to do it. Y'all remember that? Oh, we'd get so mad. That wasn't fair. We would have done it if we'd have thought of it. And they're mad because they're just a little bit afraid that James and John's may have gotten dibs on being first in line before they could get their claim in. Jesus has tried so many ways and so many times to explain what the kingdom of God is about, and yet his disciples continually miss it. So he tries once again. He says, "You know, that's not what it's about. It's not about lording over. It's about being a servant." I wonder if they even heard him. And sometimes I wonder if we are so used to making our kinds of circles that we can hear it ourselves. But it's not just that. Think about what happens when you make that other kind of circle. When you make that circle that looks out and includes everything going on around you. And it's not just about our inner clique and our inner group and who's going to be most important here. If the disciples really took Jesus seriously, instead of facing glory as they saw it and high positions as they wanted them, they had heard and heard about how the Messiah was going to come and his glorious followers were going to be glorified, and they wanted to be a part of that. But if they took seriously what Jesus was saying here, they were going to have to look out and face a very different reality. A reality that was going to include the possibility of rejection, the possibility of risk, the possibility of pain and suffering of their own and of others. No wonder it was a lot easier to say, let's just huddle up and talk about us. Because as soon as we turn around and look out into that world and see all that is going on there and all that it needs, and take that seriously, that's a whole lot more on our plate. And as soon as we look out of that world and see all of that and realize how much in need they are, in need of Christ, and we take seriously sharing that with them, ouch. All of the risk that will involve, all of the rejection and even persecution, and all of the pain. Think about it in your mind, making a circle facing inward. It seems so safe and protected. And then think in your mind about making a circle facing outward. How much more vulnerable you are. How much more exposed. How much more you feel like just about anything could happen. It's not as safe. It's not as cozy. It's not as comfortable. Yet there are those who say that Jesus did not call us to upward mobility. He didn't call us to bring a ladder and say, carry your ladder around and climb up to the highest positions you can. No, Jesus talked about outward mobility, going out where the people are hurting, seeing what they're going through, and picking up the cross. The reality is, when I have heard the prayer requests in this church and had individual conversations with so many of you, I think there's a lot of things and a lot of ways this church has turned itself outward, has seen the needs of people like Ashley, has heard the cry of their neighbors and friends and all that they're dealing with, and has brought those here for us to share in. I think we're doing rather well. I really do. What you shared in just what this church has meant to you, you shared a lot about how much it's meant because it's been a giving church. You shared that this church has meant so much to you because it shared so much love with you and made you feel like comfortable. This is a family. What would it take? What would it mean if we were to take Jesus' words here seriously? That if we wanted to be the greatest church, that we would be servants. And that if we wanted to be the first church that people thought of, that we would be slave of all. I think you've all made a start. And how you treat each other, and how you pay attention to what's going on around. But what would it take? What would it look like? How would we act and be as a church if we would take the next step along this path? Jesus is still asking that question. Are you able? Are you able to drink of the cup I drink of? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? Are you able to be a servant? Are you able to be a slave? Are you able to see beyond yourselves? Are you able? And this is a bigger question than I think we're ready for. Are you truly able and ready to see what is going on in your world and to be a part of the pain and the suffering and the brokenness and the joy and the celebration that is out there in our neighbors' lives, in our co-workers' lives, in our community, in our government, in our world? Are you able? Cried the Master. Down through eternity. And I hope that we won't just be the sturdy dreamers answered, yeah, yeah, to the death will follow thee. But I hope that we'll take it seriously and know that in Christ we can do all things.